Congratulations again to Davis Love III, former UNC Tar Heel, Tar Heel alum. He won at Wyndham this weekend in Greensboro, moving on to the FedEx Cup playoffs and denying Tiger Woods a spot. That was a come-from-behind win for Davis Love, making him the third oldest man ever to win a PGA Tour event. He's 51 years old. Debbie Stroman is a professor at the UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, also a regular sports commentator. She was watching this closely all weekend long, and she joins us now here on the air. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, what an emotionally filled weekend with all the sports going on, in particular golf.
You were talking just last week about, and I think Art Shansky in one of his notebooks last week kind of said the same thing, and I know a lot of people did, that Tiger's performance in the PGA tournament sort of coupled with the fact that you had all of these young guns, the Jordan Spieths, the Rory McIlroys, the Jason Days, really makes this a post-Tiger era. And I think Art was the one, if it wasn't somebody else, who said, and that's it, I think Tiger Woods is done winning majors. And then he turns around a week later, doesn't win, finishes close to but not winning, but actually does rather well in a tournament, and everyone's talking Tiger Woods again.
Well, there's no doubt that most people who follow golf believe that Tiger will win again on the tour, but winning a major is the next level. Mm-hmm. But I think certainly the Triad area, the state of North Carolina, is just so happy that Tiger decided to participate in the Wyndham, because he was just a big, big boom for this area. I could just go on and on about the economic effects, but Greensboro is known as the tournament town, in particular for what they do for the entire college basketball fandom around the ACC tournament in March. But the Sedgefield Country Club basically hosted an additional 40,000 fans on Saturday and Sunday, and that means money. The tournament makes somewhere between $20 and $25 million a year, but with Tiger being there, you got actually another $10 million that was pumped in, and that's everything from visitors to the area, the airport, rental cars, the broadcasting that we received, CBS Sports and the Golf Channel. I remember listening in and watching how they were explaining how the history of the Atlantic Coast Conference and how it was founded, and it's being located in Greensboro. It was just amazing. Hotels, restaurants, so just a wonderful, wonderful economic boom for the area.
That's really incredible. Is there any other individual athlete who either currently has or has ever had that big of an impact?
Well, not in terms of golf. Certainly there have been superstar athletes, but some of the other sports are more noted for their team play.
Mm-hmm.
So, in particular for the NFL, so whenever Dallas plays, you love them or you hate them, people are going to tune in. For baseball, it's the Yankees, you love them or you hate them, and you're going to tune in. But in terms of individual sports, the ability to cross not only age, but also ethnicity, being able to cross over in terms of his ability to attract the businessman and then a businesswoman, and then also people from all types of sectors, from fashion. You know, they're looking at what Tiger wears. They're trying to find out what he eats, the equipment, what car he's driving. So he's just an amazing person that's been able to just take golf to the next level.
Is that ever going to go away? I know Tiger is sort of either past his prime or in between primes, one or the other. We'll have to see about the future, but he's definitely not playing at the level that he was 5-10 years ago, and yet this is still the case. Is this ever going to diminish or go away?
Well, because of what he did, in particular his mental stamina as a golfer, I think people want to be able to say that I saw Tiger in person.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I thought about it, and I said, well, I saw him in person about 15 years ago at the President's Cup. And it's something that I can kind of brag about when I'm with my sport friends. And so I think that was the draw. Now, certainly, you know, coming out in that opening round, the second round, playing very, very well, that brought in a lot of people who said, okay, I want to be there to witness if he actually makes history and wins this and is able to now get into the FedEx Cup, the golf playoffs. But certainly I think it's just that people want to experience Tiger and see him swing that club and say that, you know, I did it. I was there.
That's true. And, you know, if you go to a golf tournament, you know, you go and you walk around and you go and you follow specific people, or you go to watch specific people tee off or hit on the fairways and the greens, and you can actively go and say, I'm going to see Tiger Woods play, as opposed to a football game or a baseball game or something like that, where you're seeing the entire team on the field, but you're not seeing this individual person necessarily.
That's right, and that's the effect of Tiger. And also, there's been many, many golfers who said that they enjoy Tiger being out there. I found a quote by Phil Mickelson, who's been arguably his biggest competitor over the past, 10-15 years. And Phil actually said that Tiger has been the instigator in all the money that they're making, and he has certainly been the biggest benefactor. And they miss Tiger when he's not playing well. They miss Tiger when he's injured. But he's really, really, as Phil said, he's propelled and driven the bus, because he's increased ratings, sponsorship, and interest.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Deb Stroman, UNC professor at the Kenan Flagler Business School. And another big issue that's going on in the world of sports, and this is one that has been going on for some time, we've talked about it before, but it kind of flared up again recently, is the issue, turning to the NFL, of the Washington football team, whatever we're calling them. They're still calling themselves the Redskins, and a lot of people are not. The issue arose again recently because of a potential conflict that's developing around the possible new stadium. The FedEx field is going to, the lease on that field is going to, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, is going to run out in 2026, so new stadium possibly down the road in a little bit more than a decade. If the Redskins want to build a new stadium in actual Washington, D.C., as opposed to out in the suburbs, Maryland or Virginia, a name change might be part of the requirement. Ownership and other administrators in the front office for Washington are saying that they're not going to consider a name change, but it might be on the table if might have to be on the table if they want the new stadium to be built in Washington, D.C. What do you make of all this?
Well, that's a great intro to this ongoing feud that's taking place. You know, football season is here, and it is the most popular sport in America now, and all eyes are on what's going to happen in terms of, the Washington, D.C. football team and their ongoing battle around this name. And so, as you stated, it is time to consider, because it really comes up every 25 years, and if mm-hmm. they don't jump on it now, they're going to miss the opportunity. But there are a number of D.C. governmental leaders who want the team to come back to D.C. They left D.C. in 1997 to go out to Maryland, and there are some who feel that the city is doing fine. We don't need to have the football team back. But the debate continues over that ugly name. You have everything from various states legislating the name out of existence in school systems. There are people now within Native American areas that are very, very impoverished, that they don't want Daniel Snyder's money. Daniel Snyder has been known over the past two or three years, as this debate has raged, to drop his funding on some of these tribal nation areas to try to, gain a positive look to the media and to American citizens. Every major Indian nation is against the name. President Obama and 50 senators all said the name should change, but Daniel Snyder holds on to the fact that it was a historical change, that they decided to take that name, and that they're honoring Americans in general, Native Americans specifically, and that they're going to hold on to the name.
And I've always thought that this whole debate has been a little misleading in terms of the argument that's made against the name change, that, oh, well, just because a couple of people find the name offensive doesn't necessarily mean you have to change the name. I personally, just my own personal opinion, I think that they should change the name, not because I find it offensive. Honestly, I don't feel emotionally one way or the other whenever I hear the name, but it is an ethnic slur, and that in and of itself, I think, should justify a name change, whether or not anyone gets offended by it at all. But it's a very multifaceted debate. Is there anything other than economics that's going to motivate the team to change the name?
Well, we're talking about economics. We're talking about morals. I believe that if one or two people, it doesn't have to be 1,000 or 10 million, to say that I ask you to refer to me as another name or call me this name, then we should honor that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening now is that it's being coupled with the whole Confederate flag issue.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of T-shirts now being worn with the Confederate flag and the D.C. football team logo, basically screaming, leave our history alone. So why would you want to even be affiliated with that whole movement? The history of D.C. and that football team is very, very disturbing. The owner, George Preston Marshall, he was, some people just say a flat-out racist, but he was the last team to actually integrate, despite pressure from the Washington Post, the federal government. President Robert Kennedy was about to take action, but the fight song that they, in fact, I think they're the first team to even have a fight song, that song, Hail to the Redskins, that was actually a fight not for old D.C., but actually to fight for old Dixie. So that just the whole nature of the team is very, very disturbing in terms of the name. And I hope that Daniel Snyder and other people who support it, that they will decide to be on the right side of history. Some people even say there's a curse on the team. You know, the starting quarterback, again, Robert Griffin III, he was hurt recently in the preseason football game. But I'll tell you, this thing just continues to add to the Washington, D.C. gridlock.
Do you think, we're speaking again with Deb Strom and Keenan Flagler Business School, do you think this is ultimately going to end with a name change?
I think the name change will definitely happen. What the issue is whether or not Virginia, D.C., or Maryland will allow the team to move before that name change. And so there are some leaders in D.C. that says that the name change is an important part of the negotiation, and we do not want you back in the city, even though some people say that that location is the best. But the Secretary of Interior, it was stated that the team cannot move back to D.C. because the name change is very, very repulsive, and the government has said that it is bad. And in order to be on this land that is federally owned, that you must change the name.
All right, that issue is going to continue to go on. Deb Strom and Keenan Flagler Business School, we got to let you go. Before we do, just sort of one more general question about this issue, something that's always been of interest to me regarding this debate. What do you think the threshold ought to be for a name change? I know on the one hand you have a team name like Redskins that has that history. On the other hand, you have other sort of similar but not quite the same team names like the Cleveland Indians, the Atlanta Braves, that are seemingly a little bit more or closer to the borderline, and then others like North Dakota Fighting Sioux and things like that. What do you think the threshold ought to be?
Well, that's always going to be a moving target because we change in terms of our socialization and in terms of our culture. But I think if, number one, we have to look at the history and the roots of a particular word or a phrase, and clearly, and I don't even like saying the word Redskins, but that has a racist history, and I don't think anybody who really does a thorough research on it would debate that as to what it stood for and what it meant. Naming teams, in particular sport teams, around particular ethnic groups, I think that in some regards you have to get permission or approval to do such, like Florida State did with the Seminoles. But anything where we have to, I mean, they're just, let's be creative. There are just so many wonderful names out there for sport teams that you don't have to even go to a ethnic naming and then run into difficulty. I think most people would argue today that it makes no sense to call a team Whiteys or Blackies or, you know, you Latinos or whatever. We just wouldn't do that. And certainly we have the ability, we have the economic willpower to make this change. We've done it before. The Washington Bullets were changed to the Washington Wizards, and there are a number of college teams that have changed their names, and they've gone on and, you know, continued. So it's possible. I just hate that there's a thought that you can try to buy your way out of this, you know, that you could put a price tag on dignity or intolerance.
Deb Strom and UNC Keenan Flagler Business School, thank you so much.
I can't get off without saying congratulations to Davis Love III. Go Tar Heels. We're very, very happy for Davis.